Hello, this is Julianne Good, and this is Psych 101. Happy Martin Luther King Day to you all. I hope you're enjoying it. I hope you have seen some of the clips on TV about the speeches and what Dr. King has done for all of us. It was a very turbulent time in the 60s when he came around and started fighting for civil rights and for rights of all human beings. And tonight, I am going to take a historical perspective versus psychology, and I'm going to play the entire I Have a Dream speech, which is a little over 13 and a half minutes. So, yeah, so sit back and enjoy, and I also want to mention that this is one of the most important speeches that has ever been recorded in history. Just for the passion and for the whole march on Washington, about 250,000 people showed up on that day in August in 1963. So I want to go through a little bit of history on him before I start this speech, because I found this fascinating. I found this on the internet. As Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday was first observed as a national holiday in 1986. However, his life had become a fixed part of American mythology for years prior to this. To many African Americans whose rights he helped expand, to many other minorities whose lives his victories touched, and to many whites who welcomed the changes his leadership brought, King's life seemed mythological even as he lived it. He is celebrated as a hero not only for the concrete legislation he enabled, but for his articulation of dreams and hopes shared by many during an era of upheaval and change. And I must say, we're in another era of upheaval and change from all the things that are happening right now. So I'm going to let this speech play. If you would like to make a comment or have a question after the speech is done, the number is 800-893-9562 at Skid Row Studios. Here we go.
In what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languishing in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. Funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time. The devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote.
Hi there. We are having some technical difficulties with that. But if you want to see the whole I Have a Dream speech, it is on YouTube. It's just in different versions, and some of them play all the way through and some of them don't. And this one, I guess, was a little glitchy. So, but incredible speech. Just amazing for what Martin Luther King Jr. did. Incredible. I'm going to read a little bit more about his history and what this meant to me, hearing the whole speech last night, because that was the first time in my life I've heard the whole speech. I've heard bits and pieces throughout my life every year, and I was always moved by it, and just the immense power of Dr. King's voice was incredible. The part that a lot of people don't know about is what had happened after Martin Luther King had made that speech in 1963. He had done a Montgomery bus boycott, which broke out in 1955, actually. So that obviously was before the speech. But he became one of the huge leaders on that as a nonviolent protest. And it led to a Supreme Court ruling, I guess, bus segregation, and it brought King to the attention of the country as a whole and led to the formation of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And Dr. King was elected as our president. The next big thing was that after the speech that he gave, there was a campaign in Birmingham, Alabama to end segregation and force the downtown businesses to employ blacks. So peaceful protests were met by fire hoses and attack dogs wielded by local police. Images of this violence broadcast on national news provoked outrage, and this reaction created a political atmosphere in which strong federal civil rights legislation could gain favor and passage. And the next year, President Lyndon Johnson signed into law the Civil Rights Act of 1964. That was huge. So the next thing is the community of black activists felt that these two major victories marked the limit of what gains could be made politically. And after 1965, Dr. King began to focus on blacks' economic problems. His strategies and speeches concentrated increasingly on class as well as race and addressed the United States as a whole. King had won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964, and this recognition encouraged him to broaden his scope. By the time of his death, he was speaking out against the Vietnam War and was organizing a Poor People's March on Washington. When King was assassinated in 1968, the nation shook with the impact. Riots broke out in over 100 American cities. King was almost immediately sanctified by the white-controlled media, which in the coverage of his accomplishments also neglected the radicalism of his final 3 years. Instead, his contemporaries focused on the spirit and the accomplishments of the middle of King's career. For many born after his death, he is known best for the I Have a Dream speech, which reflects the spirit and in which he delivered in 1963 at the height of his fame. The federal holiday commemorates this King, who articulated the progressive human hope of the early 1960s. And I hope we can keep that going 50 years later. I see signs here and there, and I hope to see more. I think we have made a little progress here and there. Obviously, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 started kicking it into gear, but there is still so many isms that we are fighting, still racism, and especially still down in the South. And, you know, I think for all of us, this speech is significant because it's we all are fighting something every day. And like I said, the isms before, the racism, sexism, ageism, fascism, you throw ism in there, and there's just so many things that we're still dealing with. So what does this mean to me? For me, you know, when I was listening to this and thinking about this morning, really, really deeply, for me, it all boiled down to, I think we need to have compassion for people who are less fortunate than ourselves. There's so many things, so many factors that come into people's lives that, for better or for worse, makes a great life or a very challenging life. And I think, at least in this country, we're so quick to judge the book by its cover. You look at a person and you think that you've sized up a person within 5 seconds. And so many times that can be wrong. So I think when you're looking at the person in front of you, ask, where has this person who stands in front of me been? Where have they been? What kind of path have they walked? You know, what are they feeling right now? What are they thinking about? Are they happy? Are they struggling? Where are they? And, you know, what have they endured from just the standpoint of prejudice? You know, prejudice and discrimination, judgment, stereotyping, profiling, bigotry, all these are really ugly words. And these all divide us. This divides our humanity. So, you know, come back sometime and think about, you know, the hardships that you've been through in your life, and have compassion for other people that may not look like you, may not think like you, you know, may not even speak the same language that you speak, but somehow you need to communicate, right? So if you would like to join me It's 800-893-9562. I am going to have Dr. Patricia Arenado from the Chicago School of Professional Psychology in the Chicago campus join me in a little bit. And she is an expert in multicultural issues. And we're going to be talking about the speech a little bit. We're also going to be talking about what is happening in our country now once it comes to racial divides. So join us in a little bit. I'm going to take a commercial break and come on back.
The Chicago School of Professional Psychology offers numerous psychology, behavioral, and health-related science graduate degrees at three campuses: Los Angeles, California, including branches in Westwood and Irvine, Chicago, Illinois, and Washington, D.C., and online. The Chicago School prepares students to meet the ever-changing mental health needs of society through classroom experience and real-world training. The Chicago School Counseling Centers in Irvine and Westwood provide caring, confidential, and affordable psychological services to individuals and their families. For more information, visit thechicagoschool.edu.
Hi, and we're back on the air with Psych 101. Thanks to the Chicago School for sponsoring Psych 101. And happy Martin Luther King Day. I hope you're celebrating it and doing something special and treating the person that you're with or strangers a little more kindly today. I think that's a significant situation. So my guest is not quite here yet, so I'm going to go through a little more history about Dr. Martin Luther King. The speech that he delivered on August 28th, 1963, was a call for the end of racism in the United States. He delivered this speech to over 250,000 civil rights supporters from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial during the March on Washington. And this speech was a defining moment of the American civil rights movement. One of the quotes that is the most memorable from I Have a Dream speech, and one of the most quoted lines, is, "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." Don't we all hope for that? Don't we all hope for that people will see beyond just the surface package, right? Yeah. And I love this part of the speech also. It says, "I still have a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. One day this nation will rise up and live up to its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream." I have that dream too. I hope that it is coming true a little bit every day, and that you're treating everybody in a well manner. So another thing about Dr. King is that in the wake of the speech in March, Dr. King was named Man of the Year by Time Magazine in 1963. In 1964, he was the youngest person to be ever awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. The full speech did not appear in writing until August 1983 in the Washington Post. And now you can find that online anywhere if you want to read it. It's pretty significant, so. So, if you would like to call up again, the number is 800-893-9562. I'm just kind of waiting for my guest. She's calling in from Chicago, so. So there's other things that I thought about this morning when I was, after I had listened to the speech a couple of times. Okay, sorry for the delay here. We are, this is the first time I've done a broadcast like this, so it's going to have a little bit of challenges attached to it. So if you could hold on just a second, please. We are going to go. So how has your day been? Let's talk about that. Yeah, it's been beautiful in Southern California. So yeah, it has been in the 70s and it's been hot. And luckily, thank you. Luckily, the fires have almost been put out, I believe. It got to about 17 to 2,000 acres. It was pretty bad. It was, you know, and I know in other parts of the country, it's been, you know, snow, cold, and we have just the total opposite on our end of the world. So it's been different. So as we're waiting here, some of the things that I've also gone through have been that, you know, when you're looking at a person, instead of judging the person by the cover, look into what has constructed just you as a person, right? Of course, you know, we all have different races, which makes us unique. We also come from different economic backgrounds. What about the neighborhood you've been raised in? That has a huge influence, right? No matter how old you are, you always carry your neighborhood with you. And then your family. Was your family intact or was it dysfunctional? Yeah, that's important too. And what kind of educational opportunities have you had? Yeah, and if you haven't had such a great education as a child or in high school, you can always change it as an adult. You know, and find out what your learning style is. And so, okay, I have gotten a cue for my board op, Jenny. Thank you very much, Jenny. And I would like to introduce to you Dr. Patricia Arenado. She is the president of the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, Chicago campus, and interim vice president for TCSPP, Academic Affairs, and chief academic officer. She joined the school in February 2013 after successfully serving in senior administrative roles with the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and at Arizona State University. Patricia has an extensive scholarship record with a focus on multicultural counseling competency models, immigrants, and life-changing processes, Latino issues in counseling, social justice advocacy, organizational diversity assessment, and women's leadership development. She has authored more than 100 articles, book chapters, and training videos, and is regularly invited for keynote addresses nationally and internationally. She has discussed the influence of the civil rights movement on the multicultural agenda in the professions of counseling and psychology. Her recently released co-authored text is Culturally Responsive Counseling for Latinas, Latinos, published by the American Counseling Association Press. She considers herself a social justice advocate. Welcome, Patricia.
Hi, Julianne. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, thank you for joining us from Chicago.
Well, I just want you to know that this has been a splendid day in thinking about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And actually this morning, early on, watching an interview with the Reverend Jesse Jackson talking about his experiences with Dr. King and everything from how he became involved to, you know, the fatal day back in April of 1968. So it's been on my mind all day, I guess I could say.
Yes, and I know we were discussing that you had done your dissertation on this part of it on the civil rights movement, correct?
Well, it was really not on the civil rights movement per se, but certainly my dissertation, which focused on immigrants, had a lot to say about the issue of civil rights on immigrants and, disenfranchisement and how all that really continues to be part of the agenda. So in many ways, it's always been on my mind.
So from a perspective of 1963, when Dr. King gave his I Have a Dream speech, to today, what changes do you think that we've made in general as a country regarding culture and racism?
In some ways, we can say that changes have occurred as a result of Dr. King's advocacy and leadership. Many people's consciousness was piqued. So we had the Civil Rights Act that was passed in 1964. We were able to see educational opportunities become accessible, education, employment, and so forth. We had women who could go to school. We had legislation that said you could not discriminate based on race, color, creed, and so forth. And I think all of that I would attribute to the activism of Dr. King. And then, of course, we saw the professions of counseling and psychology, of which, I've been actively involved with as a graduate student, and then later on, I saw how much his voice filtered into our professions, especially for the members who were people of color, because we also had our own experiences of disenfranchisement in our professional association. And knowing that we had a legacy from Dr. King, we invoked that in our professional associations to indicate that we needed to also have a seat at the table. We also needed to be part of the leadership of the American Psychological Association, the American Counseling Association. And in many ways, the ethnic minority associations that formed within those two larger organizations, I would say, were a result of the work that Dr. King did to advocate for equity, to advocate for voice and representation. And so those associations actually, the ethnic minority associations, we benefited from Dr. King's leadership. Those are just a few of the examples, but I think I would say that because civil rights has been such a big piece of legislation in this country, you can look at Title IX, you could look at the ADA Act of 1991 for the American Disabilities Act. You could even look now at gay marriage. I mean, all of those are civil rights related legislation. And the immigration movement, it's all civil rights, and it's how Dr. King really wanted to keep making changes, as people talk about it, and making sure that everyone was free, that everyone had a sense of freedom and a way that they could advocate for themselves and be part of the American dream that they all wanted, that we have all wanted to be a part of.
Right, and as was promised in the Declaration of Independence.
And you're so correct. And his "I Have a Dream" speech, he invoked. That's what I wanted to say. He invoked the Emancipation Proclamation that had been signed by President Abraham Lincoln 100 years hence, and he indicated that yes, progress has been slow for the true freedom of Negroes. That was at 100 years post the Emancipation Proclamation. And he was very clear that the work had to continue, that the work that Abraham Lincoln had, initiated, if you could say that, with that legislation, the work needed to get done and continue to get done, indeed.
Yes, and he was definitely a huge voice in the civil rights movement and getting that whole system in place. I mean, what bravery. What a hero.
Well, of course. Yeah, well, I think that was, the bravery is so true. You know, we invoke many of the messages that Dr. King left for us. And over the years, I have given talks in many places and go back to his quotes, go back to quotes from Rosa Parks, Nelson Mandela, Cesar Chavez, because all of those individuals were not about themselves, but they were about the freedom and well-being of all of us. And if you, you know, read some of Dr. King's quotes, not just from the I Have a Dream speech, but from the letters of from Birmingham and so forth, I mean, there's so many. I mean, he was really reminding us to not be bitter. He always, one of his quotes is, do not drink from the cup of bitterness and hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Do not drink from the cup of bitterness and hatred, because that really wasn't going to benefit the people, and that we needed to, and he told the people who were at the speech, the I Have a Dream speech, he told everyone that they needed to go back to their states, and most of these were people from the South where clearly segregation and discrimination was most rampant. He said, go back to Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas, and keep making changes there. Well, he was about empowering everyone, particularly people who were of African heritage, to keep making changes.
Right, exactly, because that's a way we, you know, rise above all of the suffering that we may be going through.
And yes, you're correct that I think his whole position on nonviolent protesting, his modeling about that, to be nonviolent, was something that didn't fall short on the behavior of others, because you still see the images on documentaries of African Americans in the South who were, you know, hosed with those, you know, big fire hoses and otherwise, you know, mistreated in such despicable ways. But they were about being nonviolent, following his example. And he really knew that it was about taking the higher road, I guess you could say. But you had to be brave and you had to be courageous to do that.
Exactly, and they also have to be, you know, I would imagine in riot situations like that, when you're getting hosed with a fire hose, I mean, how difficult would that be to just sit and take that kind of abuse and just not react from it? I mean, the people, the rioters that did that were just incredible human beings to be able to tolerate that much.
Well, it was all pain. I mean, it was psychological pain. It was physical pain. It was spiritual pain. And in this wonderful discussion this morning with the Reverend Jesse Jackson, he shared that, you know, clearly Dr. King felt the burden of what he had to do. And that at times, it was right before he was in Memphis, and they were talking together, and he said, you know, maybe I'll just go on a big fast and, you know, let it all happen that way and kind of sacrifice himself by enduring a fast that he would not, you know, that he would likely die from. But everyone, you know, joined together and said, no, that's not what we want. We need you. And, you know, it was one person who meant so much to, you know, millions of people. And they, you know, they stood by him and they, you know, encouraged him. And they, that night, the night before, took him to the talk with the garbage collectors, the sanitation workers, because that's where he was supposed to be, and they were waiting for him. And even though it was endurance for him to go, he went, because that's, you know, so many people depended on his word, depended on his actions. And I think it's what oftentimes we find lacking today is that kind of leader who we turn to for inspiration, that leader who has courage to stand in the face of adversity. And we've lost a lot of those. I mean, it was Dr. King, it was Cesar Chavez, you know, even Bobby Kennedy. I mean, what he stood for. And now Nelson Mandela.
Exactly.
You know, I think so many of us embraced Nelson Mandela because, my God, you know, to think that someone could come back from being in prison for 27 years and become the president in a country of apartheid. You know, those are the images, those are the lessons of strength I think we today in, you know, the 21st century need to embrace. We have to keep doing the work.
Yes, we do. And one of the things I was meditating on this morning after I listened to the speech another time and was just kind of trying to think of, okay, how does this all tie into where we all are right now? And, you know, my whole thing was that, I'm sorry. I think we need more Nelson Mandelas and more Dr. Martin Luther Kings in our lives. I think we're at a point where we're very lost as to who we're supposed to be looking up to. You know, who has our spirituality and our, you know, just our sense of well-being intact, and who can speak for us? Because there's a lot of people that are suffering right now, and they're so lost. So, you know, losing Nelson Mandela was huge to millions of people, because I think that you're right. That was one of the last voices that we've had over the last few decades.
I think what you know, in many respects, I know we all take solace in the leadership or the, you know, the spirituality of someone like Nelson Mandela and Dr. King, and at the same time, you know, what their messages all along were that, you know, freedom, you know, is not a, one person cannot make freedom happen, that we all have to bear the burden, if you would, and we have to be the consciousness of each other. So collectively, we have to do the work. And it's kind of interesting because there is a void right now. I mean, with Nelson Mandela's death, I cannot think of any other spiritual person that comes to mind, or a person, rather, who has that kind of influence and power and, I guess, guidance that's so meaningful. And so we are, you know, in some ways it's like when your parents die and you kind of feel lost, and or someone important in your life goes away and you find that you have to start to gut it out yourself. And but I think that it's not that we have to gut it out ourselves. I think we all have to take on the responsibility. And, you know, we do it all in our perhaps unique ways, but I think it's about, it really is about being deliberate. You know, we all have privilege. I always say you have to put your privilege to work. And you know, all of us who are, you know, listening tonight or talking tonight or had the opportunity to engage in a social justice activity or hear a speech from Dr. King, I mean, we do have all the privilege, and that privilege really is not something we can squander, not when so many people are in hardship moments.
Right.
And we all have to work together. We all have to be leaders in the civil rights the civil rights movement has never ended for me. I mean, I think there are so many people who are still disenfranchised, you know, whether it's in education, employment, in housing, health care access. I mean, there's so many inequities, and that's why we all have to continue to do our parts individually and collectively.
Right. We need to stand together and hook arms and just walk through it together, because I agree, there are so many people that are disenfranchised right now. And because of the economic situation over the last few years, and we're losing more and more people in the middle class, and or people are just on the edge or going down into the, you know, lower socioeconomic situations. And it's scary for a lot of people. And, you know, I think just to keep the hope alive and realize that, yes, it will get better, but we all need to work together on this. Whatever the cause is, we need to work together, because we need to rise above where we're at right now.
Well, I think we have to help everyone rise above. You know, I think in particular with children and the hardships on children who, you know, can go to bed hungry, and, you know, all of, you know, we have a lot of social action agencies and social justice agencies, and, you know, whatever we can do to contribute to those, whether it's through our own servant leadership or through other ways we can contribute, that's what I think about. Because in, you know, many of us were growing up, you know, we thought it maybe we someone else had it better than us, but I still think that for the country that we are, sort of one of the world powers, you know, to have so many children living in poverty, to have so many moms have living in poverty, all of that is really doesn't speak well for advancement. And that's where I think we can all do more than what we're doing. And I hope that everyone, you know, listening in and thinking about that, recognizes their role in making someone's life better than what it is, and to help others feel like, you know, disappointment is not all they have in their life, but there's some hope they can also have. And yes, that was something that Martin and Dr. King would always talk about, too, is that we must never accept finite disappointment and never lose infinite hope. So, you know, disappointment is there, but we must also have hope. And, you know, he also reminded us about, you know, sticking with love. And that's what he did. He said I have decided to stick with love because hate is too great a burden to bear. And, you know, bitterness doesn't help us, you know, make change. So, you know, there are a lot of things that I don't like about, whether it's the government or, you know, the way laws, I might think, limit us. But living in a country that's the greatest democracy on earth. So, you know, it's not perfect. At the same time, you know, there's more that I can do to ensure that others have it better than what they have.
Right. That's a very good way of stating it, Patricia. And I think it's really important to volunteer, help out when you can. If somebody is in need of help, stop, assist them. It's going to make you feel better. Also, along with helping that person, it helps both people that are involved in the situation. And I see nowadays more people that, you know, if there's something happening spontaneous on the street, that they have a tendency to either freeze and just stare or just walk away because they don't know what to do. And yeah, I would like to see more people come forward and say, hey, you know, even if you just stay with the person and help them to calm down, you know, to get them, you know, and stabilize until a professional can come and help them. That's a huge, huge benefit for everybody to just stop and help and just be with a person when they shouldn't be alone. Simple.
Well, I think it's what you're saying is really reflective of one of Dr. King's comments about how we need to lead and how we need to live our lives. And he said that life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others?
Yes.
What are you doing for others? That is life's most persistent and urgent question. And, you know, if you're a leader, you don't always search for consensus, but you really need to shape and influence behavior that follows. So not everyone's going to agree with you. It's not that you're going to be popular, but that's part of leading and stepping into unpopular situations of social advocacy means that you don't have to ask for permission or get consensus, but you must do it. And again, ask yourself the question, what are you doing for others?
Yeah, and do it with conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And do it with an honest want to help out, to make the world a better place, no matter where you're at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately, I have to live with myself and know that I've done this with, you know, made a difference, done it with integrity, and that someone else, in fact, has benefited, I hope benefited from it, but I can't get attached to whether they've benefited or not. All I know is that my intention has been one of integrity.
Yes, sometimes you just need to go out there, give, and then just leave, and just hopefully that person can take those seeds of your compassion and grow them. And, you know, so that they can help themselves with it and then turn around and help the next person. That would be mm-hmm. marvelous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct. It's all about, you know, modeling. It's about interdependence and that we all need one another, you know, as human beings. You know, sometimes it's not fair and, you know, I can do a little bit more for someone else and just make their life a little easier, even if it's for a few moments, but you know that I care. I mean, it's about showing caring and doing for others.
Yes, it is. And don't you think that was one of the main messages of Dr. King's speeches?
Well, that's that many, many times over, you know, because he was so passionate about freedom. He was so passionate about giving and caring. You know, he was pretty selfless in that regard. And, yeah, I think he was always trying to, you know, he in many ways, as I said before, I think he was sort of our conscience. You know, he would say, you know, about, you know, not being bitter, about, you know, not engaging in hatred, about, you know, not being attached to our giving and, you know, letting it just be. I mean, all of that is what a, you know, a selfless person does, and a person who cares about the larger good. And that was part of all of his messages of love and hope.
I agree. He was definitely a hero.
Yes.
So, Patricia, as we're wrapping up, what do you think that Dr. King's greatest contribution was overall?
There's so many things, candidly, he contributed. But it was his, I guess I would say it was his vision. His vision for equality. His vision that someday, you know, we would all have all people who were disenfranchised, and particularly, you know, he spoke to people of African heritage in this country, you know, that they would be free, and which is why, you know, he often invoked the Negro spirituals and ended that particular speech with, you know, the free at last chant. Because that's what it was all about, being free. And, you know, we can all resonate with what freedom means to us. But I think he certainly fought and led and inspired us to think about freedom in this country for everyone.
Yes, and also the responsibility that comes along with freedom.
Of course, yep.
Yeah, that's also important, too. And is there anything else that you would like to add before I let you go to bed finally in Chicago?
Well, only I really appreciate the opportunity to reflect and on Dr. King's legacy. You know, it's for me, it's always a re-education to go back and read excerpts from his books and presentations that I've made where I have invoked his words of inspiration and encouragement. And so I feel very satisfied today to have started the day knowing that I was going to talk with you and, you know, preparing over the last couple of days, rereading, you know, some of his work so I could talk with you tonight. So for me, it's been very fulfilling and knowing that I'm leaving this talk with a sense of I feel uplifted from talking with you about this.
Well, thank you. And we appreciate you coming on and discussing Dr. King with us and your expertise. And if anybody would like to get any copies of your books, where can they do so?
Well, they could probably just send me a quick email to prarredondo@thechicagoschool.edu.
Okay, and can you spell that, please?
Oh, one word is all one word, PARREDONDO at the Chicago School, one word, .edu.
Terrific. Thank you so much. You are a wonderful guest.
You're welcome, Julianne. It's been my pleasure talking with you today on this important day.
Thank you very much, Patricia. And I'm hoping to have you on again sometime soon this year.
It sounds like I'm there. Thank you.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you so much. Take care now.
Good night now.
Good night.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
And that was Dr. Patricia Arredondo from the Chicago School of Professional Psychology in Chicago, Illinois. I appreciate that she was on with us. This morning, it was kind of funny. She thought we were going to be on at 7:30 this morning, so I wasn't clear about it. It was in the evening. So I really, really appreciate that she came on and was my guest for this evening, even with the time difference here. So, and I would like to wrap this up with that we should celebrate the rise of any person out of the ashes of injustice, poverty, abuse, and circumstances from which we're out of their control. Because this is how greatness rises up, is sometimes from not such great circumstances. And when we rise up ourselves, we should then turn around and offer our help to somebody else who needs it and keep that chain of healthiness going and goodwill. Because I think we need that more and more nowadays. We are all on this planet together. We do not do this life alone. And I think Dr. King would definitely be in on that. We have to be together. We have to learn to fight for peace in a nonviolent way. So please take all of the messages of today, put it in your heart, use it in your lives. And I want to thank you for joining us tonight. If you would like to contact me, you can do so at jgoode8@verizon.net. You can also download this and any previous Psych 1-on-1 shows at iTunes Store under podcast. And we are also archived at skidrowstudios.com and also on Facebook and Stitcher. So thank you so much for joining us. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other's. Bye now.